Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we speak with Greg Norman, who spent 6.5 years of his life ranked as the number one player in the world, but is now seeking to radically shake up the golf world with a new technology called Shark Experience. Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Max Adler, and today we're joined by a Hall of Famer, winner of 91 professional events and 2 Open Championships, the Great White Shark, Greg Norman. At age 62, you still look fit enough to compete on the PGA Tour, but your focus for some time has been growing your business empire. The Greg Norman Company makes clothes, wine, designs golf courses, operates wakeboarding parks, tons of other stuff I'm probably going to leave out. And as I understand, Greg, today you're in New York City to make a major business announcement. So thanks for coming in to visit us and tell us what's shaking.
Yeah, thank you, Max. And yes, it's been an interesting 4-year journey, to tell you the truth. And the whole journey to get to where we are today with Shark Experience really started about 50 months ago. And you know, everybody wants to know what is the story on the back of a napkin that starts off a business enterprise, right? And really, it was me walking into a cart barn storage area, which is normally below clubhouses, right? And you walk in there, and there's probably 72 carts on average in every club that has golf carts available to their members. And I walked in there, and I saw a couple of carts had screens on them, and a lot of them didn't have screens on them. And I knew exactly why the screens are there, GPS. I was an investor in the GPS space for nearly 18, 20 years. And I looked at these deals and I thought, you know, this is just like a hotel. You walk into a hotel, every room may have 1 or 2 TVs, right? Maybe even more, but it's fed by what? An outside DirecTV or whatever's feeding in that. And everybody can pull up music, kids shows, adult shows, movies, news, sport, whatever they want is sitting right there. So when you look about where we were at that time 50 months ago in the world of golf, everybody was starting to bring their iPhones to the golf course to listen to the music. People were bringing their Bluetooth speakers sometimes. And they were staying in touch. And if they were bored, what would the first thing you do? You'd pick up your iPhone and see, okay, what's going on today? Who's texting me? Is there an email in? What's happening? Is my notifications? They were engaged with their iPhone. So I thought, if I have the ability to put a screen on every one of these carts that come out of Club Car, which is the majority shareholder of all golf car and golf courses in America, I thought, I'm on the edge of something. And a lot easier to think about it, a lot harder to implement. And so I went back to my business partner, David Chesler, and I sat down with him, and I thought, hey, we've got an opportunity here. It's called Virgin Space. And I said, let's see if we can unlock this through our mindset and our connections and just see. And we started developing a business model. And then the only way it would really succeed in the eyes of somebody like Club Car is if we financed putting a screen on every one of their carts that rolled out of their facility. And that's 50-plus thousand a year. So not hard to do the math when you're looking at a screen worth, you know, $350-$400, right? That's a lot of money each year. But at the same time, there's a quid pro quo, and part of a business deal is if we finance that, we want this. And that this was content. Mm-hmm. And voila, there you have a pretty simple business model. You have the hotel model. You have the ability to connect everybody through one device, which was on the screen. So that's how it was. And now we had to find a connectivity partner, and we partnered up with Verizon. So when we were with Verizon in the early stages, everyone from Lowell McAdam, Marnie Waldrum, down to Tim Armstrong from AOL, all the way down to John Stratton, all the upper echelon of executives within Verizon saw a huge opportunity for their connectivity world as well. So one and one added up to two. We were all like-minded, and we all pushed this initiative internally amongst ourselves. We had a code name for it. So between Verizon, Club Car, GPSI, and myself, here we are today. We've bought something brand new to the game of golf, which is all about technology, not golf clubs, not soft goods, meaning shirts, not golf balls, but what we have in our hand every day, which is a device.
Now, I was given the special opportunity to preview this cart as a member of the media. And just for the people listening out there, it's basically a Wi-Fi connected cart. There's a screen, which you're used to seeing, but you can stream music, shows, kind of anything you can think of.
Live sports.
And one of the features that struck me was the speakers are angled, and the cones are designed to project the sound right into the middle of the cart. And then if you step 40 feet away or so, you can barely hear it. And I'm sure there was a lot entailed mm-hmm. in getting that right. But from where you sat as the visionary, what were the biggest hurdles or what to getting this thing to come to be?
Talking about cache content and mm-hmm. live streaming, whether it's live sports, that was the biggest deal. Cache content, okay, how do you download it when the carts are all in the barn at night between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m.? Okay, Verizon solved that problem for us. But they had a problem too because a lot of the clubhouse facilities and the cart storage facilities are buried below. So are they receiving a signal to fire in that cache content every night for that period of time? Mm-hmm. So they had to go out there. Now, Club Car, as I mentioned, is the largest supplier of golf carts in the United States. They're on about 6,700 golf courses of the 15,000, rounding it up, golf courses in America. So now they had to go out to all of those golf clubs and see if they could get a signal into that basement. So that was a big undertaking. That took a lot of time, of course, and we found stuff that places that were, no, couldn't be. So they had to resolve that if they wanted to be our partner. That was their responsibility. So a massive undertaking on that part. But, you know, we had time on our side because we knew with the partnership we had between myself, Club Car, Verizon, GPSI, nobody else could enter this space because we were pretty much locked it up to get the quality best of breed of companies we had together. So that was one of them. And then obviously the motherboard, working with GPSI, inputting all this new technology in the back of it, you know, getting registered, you know, with Verizon, all that stuff that, you know, you got to go back to, to the federal agencies and get the systems registered. It's been a incredible monumental task, to tell you the truth.
4 years worth. Now, there's definitely going to be some traditionally minded golfers out there, probably listening right now, who are thinking, mm-hmm. you're cramming technology where it doesn't belong. Golf is our refuge. Is this what golf needs right now?
Well, look, the beautiful part about this platform is it's, you can do whatever you want. It is your game, your way. You make the choice, what you want. You can have it all or you can have zero. Totally up to you. But I must admit, golf has struggled to pull the millennials in. Golf has struggled to pull the Gen Zers in. When you see what's happened with what Topgolf has done, 11 million people visited their facilities last year. 4.4 of them have never played golf before. So if we can pull those 4.4 from Topgolf and give them a Topgolf type experience on the golf course with F&B and live streaming music and all that stuff, whatever they choose to do, now we start moving the needle forward. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a period of time. You know, looking a couple of years out, you start getting, you know, 50,000 carts the first year, 100,000 the second year, up to 200. Then you roll it out into 400,000 within 8 years. All of a sudden, you got 500,000 cars out there. Now it's allowing people to get connected to the way they want it. But you are right, though. There are going to be golf courses who don't want it. That's fine. They don't have to have it.
So if I'm one of the golfers who gets to experience this at one of the courses at which it's being rolled out, what am I going to experience this year versus maybe a year or two down the road? What can I expect now, and what could this be?
Well, first of all, we're going to preview it at the PGA show the week of January next year. And then we start, then Club Car starts producing these vehicles, and they will, like, 1Q, 2Q, that's when it'll all start rolling out. It's not now. We're still in the pilot stage right now. We're at two facilities testing it all out. We're actually improving on it today as we speak. It's better than what it was last week. So it's forever going to evolve, just like your iPhone. You get a new update every now and then. It's a better system. You know, it's being perfected. So right now, as you look at it, you can have the GPS dynamic yardages. You can have that. It's called, you can have play, watch, and listen. So, you know, they're the three different bundles you can have on there. You can have just the golf if you want to. You can have golf and your music, and then you can have golf, music, and whatever you want to watch from live sports and stuff. And eventually it just keeps building and building from a content base. And you're going to find that people are going to be requesting certain things that, you know, right now we don't have on the platform. But it's a very open platform. We can do whatever we want to do with it. And it's just like modifying your device, right? You can put whatever app you want on there to make your life a lot easier.
I will say it was one of the best kept secrets in golf. It was months ago that the first press releases teased the breakthrough technology coming from the special partnership between Greg Norman and Verizon. I tried snooping around to figure out what it was and didn't come up with much. Now that today it's kind of officially out of the bag, what has been the reaction from people who are just hearing about it?
Well, look, I haven't looked at my iPhone yet. I'll probably do that at the end of the day. That's why Jane McNeil's sitting over here. That's her department. She can vet all those. But at the end of the day, to me, the important calls that I get are the conversations that I have with Jay Moynihan. We are in serious negotiations now with the PGA Tour to put their content on. So because of my, obviously, connections and close association with the PGA Tour, they have a massive amount of content. When golfers play on a Thursday through to Sunday, they probably want to watch what's happening on the PGA Tour. So we're in the very, very serious negotiations right now of tying them up as our partner on the content side. And then comes the EasyLink side, right? Because PGA Tour is in partnership with EasyLinks. EasyLinks now will be doing our cashless key system. So the whole process will be a member for a day. You'll be able to walk up, you'll be able to swipe your card one time, just like you're going into a hotel or anywhere else, swipe your card one time. You'll get a Shark key, which is a digital key. You'll have a code on that. You'll go outside to any golf cart, you'll push that code in. The golf cart is now yours. It's active, ready to go. So, you know, just by having the PGA Tour with their content, EasyLinks, which we do have today because they're implementing that cashless system on it, all of a sudden now we're opening up another new world that everybody kind of experiences every day through their credit card. This will be the first time it's ever been brought to golf.
Jay Moynihan, Commissioner of the PGA Tour, when did you broach this idea to him of this Wi-Fi connected cart, and what was his reaction?
I'll probably go back a little bit before that and talk about the conversations I had with the major management companies. Probably they, now we're going back a couple of years, because we had this idea, my partner and I, but we had to filter a little bit and get some information to see whether it's a viable proposition. And when we spoke to the high-end management companies, actually management companies right across the board that did high-end exclusive like Discovery Land all the way down to companies that kind of manage the lower-end golf courses, it was a resounding yes from them. We need this, we need this. And then I personally went to the PGA of America, sat down, introduced my thought process to Pete Bevacqua in his office, talked about it, and they basically said, look, we've been trying to get in this space, identify it, but we've never been able to do it. We're 100% behind you. Okay, check that box. So now we go to the NGCOA, National Golf Course Owners Association, which they're about 4,000 strong, plus or minus, and now they're the mom-and-pop organizations that are looking for revenue generating opportunities, right? And that's exactly what Shark Experience is. It gives revenue back to the golf club. We share in the upside of this. So for them, they go, wow, okay, check the box on that. So everywhere we went, and now I have to go to the PGA Tour because the PGA Tour is a very powerful institution in our game, got global reach. And I reached out to Jay Moynihan only in the last couple of months, actually. And because now we had serious legs on what we were doing, the announcement dates were already set. We had our screen all set, ready to go. So we got in front of them, and they all of a sudden said something to me that nobody else has ever said. They have never been able to capture the out-of-home market. And when they said that to me, I went, well, we actually got it. Because what these golf cars will be with when fully deployed, it'll be 155 million golfer rounds per year, or basically 1.6 people per cart per round, right, on average. So that's 93 million people per year on these golf cars looking at shark experience. That's an out-of-home market the PGA Tour wants to have, needs to have. And when Jay looked at me and said that to me, I went, oh, I didn't even think about that, right? So now we are an out-of-home market media provider. Mm-hmm. And I go, another massive opportunity there, because the PGA Tour recognized that, and hence our negotiations as we sit here today about them being partners with Shark Experience.
Playing golf and be able to watch the PGA Tour tournament conclude on a Sunday sounds like an experience I think a lot of people would opt for. Now, you've gone through kind of how you were able to organize this and how you brought in the right partners and talked to people at the right time. But you also had to test this at some courses, mm-hmm. if I'm correct. There were
two facilities,
pilot courses. Tell us about that process and what you learned, if anything, from the early testing.
Well, we've learned a lot, number one. We went to two public facilities. One was a high-end daily fee, about $160 round. I'm not going to say where the facilities are. And another one was a lower-end facility, around $40 a round. But, you know, the resounding response was, oh, my gosh. You know, this is like going from Atari to Xbox. When you hear comments like that from people out there, and probably the one that really sunk in the most for me was a father and son were playing golf. The son was 14 years old, doesn't play golf. And the father said every time he took his son out to the golf course, he would take his iPad. But, excuse me, his iPad would run out of battery after the four or five holes. And he said it's the first time that his son has actually stayed with him for 4.5 hours, because he was watching his, whatever he was watching his shows, and the kid had a fantastic time. And dad was excited because, you know what? Now, dad can play golf, and he can spend time with his son, 14 years old, for 4.5 hours or whatever time period they took to play that round of golf. That, to me, was important, because now there's nothing better than pulling a kid off a couch, having him go out there and enjoy the outdoors facilities, be with mom or dad, and just be introduced to the game of golf, maybe. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden we've opened up this whole new world. So comments like that to me, again, a validation that, okay, most people love this idea, but not everybody's going to be on board with it.
You've built such a golf empire in the last 2 decades. You've been in the golf business for quite a time now. It seems like it's an industry with a lot of short-sighted ideas. What's your long view on the golf industry right now?
Well, it's a sport that's never going to go away. I think any time you go through a recession like the GFC back in 2007, 2008, golf always is going to suffer during a recession because of disposable income, right? So the disposable income adds up to ROT, return on time. But at the same time, if there's a recession in the United States, the GFC was different because it was a global one. But if the U.S. goes through a bit of a hiccup with a recession, the money shifts somewhere else, because golf is an economic indicator. We know through our golf course design business exactly where the money's flowing, whether it's flowing to South America, Central America, Mexico, United States, or Asian market, Asia Pacific market, Middle East, or down to South Africa or even Australia. Because these people who invest into developments, whether it's residential golf course communities, whether it's high-end resorts, low-end resorts, or whether it's just pure golf. Golf, and that, obviously in the latter one, is a necessity, but everyone else, it's an amenity to a means, right? So we know where the money's going. So we know, okay, golf is moving into Asia. We know golf in Vietnam is going to be accelerated over the next couple of years because the Vietnamese government delivered an initiative. We want 72 or 78 golf courses built over the next resort developments, excuse me, built over the next 10 to 15 years because of it brings in tourism. It brings people to their country. So they recognize it very, more so than any other country that I have seen, Middle East maybe, but Vietnam really captured this market, and that market was that Chinese market because the moratorium was implemented in China, but the Chinese love to play golf. So all of a sudden that gravity dripped down from China down to Vietnam, which is a beautiful part of the world, right? Beautiful beaches, beautiful weather. The Vietnamese government recognized that and capitalized on it. So being the economic indicator, I always see the positive side of the future of golf, because there's always going to be growth in hospitality. There's always going to be houses needed for people to build and live in, right? The generation is not getting smaller. It's growing and growing and growing. So as it grows out, you only have to look out a generation from now. The parents are involved with kids now who are 10 or 15 years old, and 25 years from now, they're going to be looking for houses. So, you know, that cycle keeps going out and going out. So golf will always go through its ups and downs, but golf is always going to be there.
Good long thinking thoughts. Shifting gears just a bit now, there are golf fans who are too young to ever see you compete, but who now know you as an Instagram star. Mm-hmm. You've become sort of an icon for physical fitness. Did you ever anticipate that this would come to be? And talk to us about some of the motivation behind your posts.
Well, I think, no, I never anticipated this, to tell you the truth. I just wish I had social media when I was playing golf, when I was number one player in the world. I thought I would have embraced it. I know, because I am a kind of a people's person, quite honestly. I don't run around with an entourage. I don't have security all over the place. I'm who I am. I feel very, very comfortable.
You showed up here today just with Jane.
Just with Jane, exactly, yeah. Right.
Not that you're a bad bodyguard, but.
But I feel very comfortable in my own skin, in my own place, my own time, whether it's in the White House or the Prime Minister's Parliament House in Australia or wherever we go. And I think it's important for my followers who have seen me and the followers today to feel that through my social media account. And I've always been a fit guy because it's a stress reliever for me anyway. And I have never backed off of it since 1992, 93. And just a couple of interesting posts here and there just lights up the internet a little bit. And so you got to keep going, keep supplying a little bit more. And, Jane and I were, going down an elevator one time. And I said, Jane, this is what I sometimes do on an elevator when I'm in there on my own. I'll do some leg raises, right? So she's, let's post that. So all of a sudden, there it is, it morphs out a little bit, and people are always asking what else you do. And I don't do it all the time, maybe once every 10 days, 2 weeks to a month. But I just enjoy interacting with my fan base.
Another dominant former world number one has been posting a lot lately. Tiger Woods with his swing videos, who just announced he'll be making his return to competitive golf at the end of the month. Like Tiger, you had an incredible run of consistency for, being number one for so long. You should have a better perspective than a lot of us hacks out there. What should we be looking for in his return? How will you assess his game as he tees it up next month?
Well, look, that's a tough question for me to answer, because I don't know what's in Tiger's mind, and I don't know how good or bad his body really is health-wise. But I can tell you from my perspective, I've had back surgeries, I've had knee surgeries, shoulder surgeries, hip surgeries, all that because of golf, that golf repetition, right? And when you're a power player like I was and Tiger is today, you're putting a lot of load on your body all the time. So your fine senses, like your proprioception of where your body is in space on your downswing when you're putting that violent move on, it changes because your body knows you're hurting somewhere, or your body has a weak link because of surgery or because of an injury. So he's got to manage his expectations a little bit less now because it's not going to be the same way. I mean, what is he, 2 years old on, 3 years since all this, since he disappeared off the golf scene? And these kids are 3 years younger. They're not 3 years older either. They're 3 years younger. These new kids coming out, they've heard about him. They've seen him play golf, but they're not intimidated by him. So he has to manage that in his own mind. He's still young, in his early 40s, I believe, right? So he's still got a little bit of time on his side. But again, every time you go out there and you hit, whether it's 50 balls or 150 balls or whether it's 400 balls, to be really good at this game, you can't get away with hitting 50 to 100 to 150. You've got to be out there all day. Even putting, bending over and putting for hours on end is tough on your back. Chipping is tough on your back. So, again, you know, I wish him the best because he has gone through a physical horror show, quite honestly. Some of it probably self-inflicted. But at the end of the day, he's good for the game of golf. He is going to move the needle. People are interested to seeing what he's doing. And some of his posts he's doing out there are kind of, you know, tease you a little bit to see what he's going to do.
At your peak, how many balls a day were you hitting?
I would probably average between 800 to 1,000 a day. So
what does that even look like?
About 5 million a year, about 5 million in my lifetime, I think it is, something like that.
5 million golf balls in his lifetime. Well, Greg, thank you so much for coming in here today and kind of pulling back the curtain on Shark Experience and all that led up to this new technology that's going to be an exciting thing for golfers next year. Listeners out there, if you want to read the story of my exclusive sneak preview round with Greg, you can see that on golfdigest.com.
Thanks, Max.
Well, thanks again to Greg Norman for coming in here today, and thank you for listening. If you haven't done so already, you can subscribe to the Golf Digest podcast on iTunes, and be sure to check back next week when we have a new guest.